So we still have to meet on Tisha B'Av. But I admire the fact that so many found time to find and learn about the Churban. As long as we learn about the Churban, we are sure that one day we are going to come here on Tisha B'Av and to celebrate the day, as the Nevi'im promised us. And I have a very simple question first. How many years since the Churban? How many years we mourn from the Churban? How many Tisha B'Av we had so far? I have to wake you up a little bit. So math at this time might not be the best idea, but obviously it will force you to think a little bit. So how many Tisha B'Av we had since the Churban of Beit HaMikdash? We are in the year 2018. What? And the Churban was when? A good answer would be too many times. That's true. But how many exactly we had so far? So if we are in the year 2018, Beit HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 70, most likely 70. We are going to talk about it a little bit. So what is the Cheshbon? The Cheshbon is 1948, right? It's very simple. And if the Medina was established in 1948 and now we are in the 70th year, then obviously it's the same number, 1948. That's a lot. That's a lot. And hopefully it's the last one. It could be nice, you know, if the Medina was established in 1948, that this year will be dedicated for Binyan Beit HaMikdash, like 70 years later. Ein Letzion Sofia. But unfortunately, we have to meet on this sad day, not celebrating Tisha B'Av, as I said before. But I have another question. How do we know that indeed Beit HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 70 AD? How do we know that? There is no book in the Tanakh that will tell us that, because the Tanakh was concealed many years before that. So how do we know that? Josephus, we have actually it well documented. But here is the next question. When Beit HaMikdash Hasheni was built, in other words, how many years Beit HaMikdash, the second Beit HaMikdash, existed? How many years? Give me a guess. What do you think? 500 years. Other guess? It's interesting that we are not sure exactly how many years the second Beit HaMikdash existed. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to discuss this issue. It's important. How do we know what happened and when it happened in the ancient history of Jewish history? Now, very interesting, you will not find in the Tanakh even one time that the date is related to Briat HaOlam. Today, we know very well, and Be'ezrat Hashem, from tomorrow we are going to have Smachot, and in the Ketubah, it will be mentioned that the date of the wedding is 5,000 years and 778 lebriyat haolam beminyan she'anu monim kan beToronto and everywhere else. But how do we know indeed what happened since then until today? And again, in the Tanakh you will not find even once that this event happened in the year 2000, Lebriyat HaOlam. There is no mentioning to Briyat HaOlam. Actually, you know where is the first time that we find something that is related to Briyat HaOlam? In the Talmud it appears one time, and even this one time, many of the Rishonim say that it's actually a quote from the time of the Geonic time, like the 8th century or something like this. We don't have any mention in the Talmud, in the Mishnah, something to Briyat HaOlam. It's very interesting. we find, the first time that we find archaeologically, by the way, some idea about the time as we count it to Briat HaOlam, is old graves that are found in Italy. And in the years 3700 or something around this time, we find some mentioning of Briat HaOlam. This happened, this person died 3,000 years and 700 years to Briat HaOlam. Until then, we don't find it. How did they sign their documents? We know that the document, a shtar, is not kosher if you don't have a date. So what are the dates that they wrote on the gittin, on the shtarot, documents, if they had acquisitions or something like this? What was the time that they mentioned? Normally it was how many years to a certain king, you're right. And we have a whole system of minyan shtarot. The minyan shtarot, which was accepted not only by the Jewish world, but in general, start in the year minus 312, the time of Alexander the Great, around this time. And just by chance, it exactly 1,000 years after Yetziat Mitzrayim, according to the Cheshbon of Chazal, as we are going to explain in a second. The way we count Jewish history in the Midrashim, in the Talmud, in the Mishnah, is based on one little book, which is called Seder Olam Rabbah. Was written by a student of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta, very famous. Rabbi Yossi everywhere in the Talmud, if not mentioned, otherwise, Rabbi Yossi Aglili or Rabbi Yossi, another Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda. We are talking about Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta. If you today go in the Galil, you have many graves of the Tanaim. You are going to find two graves, one to each other with a little blue dome of Chalafta and his son, Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta. So if you believe that all the kvarim that we find in the Galil are authentic one, and this is an interesting question by itself that is not going to discuss right now, you can find actually the graves of Rabbi Yossi and his father, Chalafta. And again, Rabbi Yossi was one of the students of Rabbi Akiva. He wrote this little book, Seder Olam Rabba, where upon psukim from the Tanakh, he calculates all the events that took place from Briat HaOlam until the time of Bar Kokhba, which was a little bit before his time. And all the Jewish calculation is based on what he wrote in this little book, Seder Olam Rabba, which are 30 prakim, 30 chapters, divided to three sections. And again, until this time, we don't have a clear count of Jewish history. What can be the reason for that? Because Jewish history is very, very important. The answer is, I believe, no one cared. Why should they care if this happened at this time or this time or this time? The fact was quite clear. Am Israel is in Eretz Israel. Everything is going more or less, you know, one area is a little bit better, one time is a little bit worse. But why should they care about their history? Until the time of Rabbi Akiva, until the time of destruction. If you don't know what was your history, you will have no future. I think that this theme was mentioned many, many times in every Tisha B'Av, including today. If we cannot remember our past, we will have no history. And at the time of Rabbi Akiva, of Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta, it was not clear that there will be a future to the Jewish people. And I believe that this was the reason why indeed Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta found it for the first time necessary to write down what happened in Jewish history. If his students will know what happened in Jewish history, there is a good chance, and he was successful, that we, 2,000 years or 1948 years later, we are going to be here around learning and talking about Jewish history and waiting for the great future of Jewish history. So in the first page, in the sheets that I just handed out, there is a small introduction to Seder Olam Rabbah, the translation is from Sefaria, which I have to mention is one of the most wonderful things that are happening in the Chinuch in North America. All the sources are translated in a very good way. And according to the Seder Olam Rabbah, the second Beit HaMikdash stood for 400 years and 20. He made all the calculation, and I want to explain the calculations. Unlike any other history book, and we are going to mention a few of them later, the Seder Olam Rabbah is a Braita. It was written in the time of the Mishnayot, okay? It does not have a place in the Mishnah, but it is a Braita. The Braitot, like the Mishnah, are based on Torah Shebichtav. No source in Torah Shebe'al Peh at the time of the Tanaik time, a person came with an idea. This is not happening. Every idea, every halacha is based on psukim. And Seder Olam Rabbah is not very different. Every time that he want to say that the beginning of Beit HaMikdash HaRishon, for example, happened in this year, he will prove it from the psukim. And many times, it's in inexplicit way. Because again, the Tanakh itself, many, many times, did not write down when it happened. I'll give you a classic example that Rashi brings, and you are not going to like. But you have to know that it's based on Seder Olam Rabbah. We all know that Yitzhak, coming from the Akedah, is not married, and later on he's married Rivka. How old was Rivka when Yitzhak married her? This is a Rashi on the Chumash. 3 years old. Well, do you really believe it? Well, why do you believe it? I'll tell you why, because that's what the Seder Olam Rabbah does. He says, upon the Psukim, that Yitzchak came from the Akedah, he was 37 years old, and at this time, Abraham heard that Rivka was born, and then if you follow the other Psukim, you are going to find out, well, he was 37 at the time, then he married her so many years later, then she was 3 years old when he married her, based on the Psukim. But there is an interpretation here. And the interpretation is that, indeed, all this happened that Rivka was born at the time that Yitzchak comes back from the Akedah. The Torah never said that. The Torah never said, you know, as Yitzchak came from the Akedah, Abraham heard that Rivka was born. This is the interpretation of Seder Olam Rabbah. And according to this, it must be that if Abraham married Rivka when he was 40 years old, then she was 3 years old. Fantastic. Now, you already feel, I hope, the problematic way to determine the years according to this minimal parshanut of the psukim. Because we don't have any other source. The Torah talks about when Avraham Avinu heard about Rivka, it was right after the Akedah. Therefore, we must assume, says this book, Seder Olam Rabbah, Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta, it must be at the same time, and therefore she must be 3 when he married her. Many of the Rishonim, It's not me saying that it's not true, it's impossible. It's really doesn't sound great. And many of the Rishonim say, no, no, you know, you can say that what Abraham heard, now the Torah is telling us about what he heard before, and she was at the time already maybe 15 years old, 20 years old, and it makes the gap much smaller. Yeah, maybe she was 20 years old or 18 years old or maybe 25 years old when he married her. But the Seder Olam Rabbah, as a Tana, he explained the Psukim as he wants. According to him, the second Beit HaMikdash stood for 400 years and 20. And I want to read here the Gemara. You know what? I will read it in Hebrew and I leave you the translation here. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, he's already Amora, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, the second generation of Amoraim. May dechtiv, Yirat Hashem tosif yamim, ushnot reshaim tikzarna. What this pasuk is talking about? That if you are having a fear of God, you are going to have long years, ushnot reshaim tikzarna. And the years of the wicked are going to be short. Yirat Hashem tosif yamim ze mikdash rishon. In the first Beit HaMikdash, it was a state of Yirat Hashem, and therefore the Kohanim Gdolim, serving in this Beit HaMikdash, lived long life. Because Beit HaMikdash HaRishon Amad 410 Shanim, it stood for 400 years and 10 years, the first temple. Ve'lo shimshu bo ela yutchet Kohanim Gdolim. We have lists of the Kohanim Gdolim in Divrei HaYamim in the first temple, and we have 18 Kohanim Gdolim for the entire time of 400 years and 10, which makes, I would say, the serving of each Kohen on average something around between 20 to 25 years. That's nice. Yeah, normally they were appointed when they were 50s. They died when they were in 70s, 80s. However, ושנות רשעים תקצרנה זה מקדש שני. שעמד דלת מאות ועשרים שנה, it stood for 420 years, ושימשו בו יותר משלוש מאות כהנים. In the time of the second temple, we had 300 כהנים גדולים. And, צמהם, from this 410, 40 years of this 420, sorry, שימש שמעון הצדיק. Shimon HaTzadik, the famous Kohen Gadol that is mentioned first in Masechet Avot, he was for 40 years, ushmonim sheshimesh Yochanan Kohen Gadol, and out of the 310, Yochanan Kohen Gadol was for 80 years. We already have two Kohanim for 120 years. Eser sheshimesh Ishmael ben Fabi, another 10 years. And we know that there were another 297 Kohanim for the rest of the time, like for 200 years. What does that mean? Tse v'chashov kol echad v'echad lo otzi shnato. There was the rest of the Kohanim, the 297, they all served for a few months. And they died. You all know the story that they came in, like to Kodesh HaKodashim on Yom Kippur, they were striked because they were not really like holy people, and they had sometimes to push them around. The truth is that obviously some of them bought it by money and were replaced because someone else paid more money to the Romans or to Herod or to the ruler at the time. But he says, and that's what's important to our idea, the Gemara based the number 410 for the first Beit HaMikdash, 420 for the second one. And there is a beautiful hint by Baal HaTurim, who lived in the 13th century. You know that they have all kind of hints from the Torah to think that we know later from Torah Shebe'al Peh. So here is a beautiful remez. I knew it for years until I started digging in into it. It's a beautiful remez in the Torah itself. Regarding the shemen, the oil of the menorah, It says Shemen Katit Lamaor. Katit means crushed. When we produce the oil for the menorah, we have to crush the oil, the olives, and the first oil is going to be for the menorah, because it was very fine oil, beautiful. It had to light in a beautiful way. So it was Shemen Katit, the first drops from the olive. So the word Katit is a nice word, because you can divide it to two. Remez, Taf Yud, which stands for 410. Taf Chaf, which is 420. Yehen Oheg Adlakata Menorah. So the word Katit is a hint to the time that the menorah was used. In the first Beit HaMikdash, we have the Taf and Yud, which stands for 410. And the second Beit HaMikdash, as we saw here, is Chaf and Taf, which stand for 420. You get the idea? It's a very nice idea. For years, I knew, everyone would ask me, I would say, of course, it's a very famous idea. The first Beit HaMikdash was for 410 years. The second Beit HaMikdash stood for 420 years. Be'avonotai, I learned later that it's not so clear. We are going to share what I learned together. But before that, I want to explain something about Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta and his significance, because maybe when we are going to see the contradiction to this idea that the second Beit HaMikdash was stood only for 420 years and not more than that, maybe there will be some significance to the time that Seder Olam Rabbah was written. So here is a famous story about the time, the persecutions of the Romans, or especially of the great Talmidei Chachamim, and Rabbi Yehuda was known as Rosh HaMedabrim, the great speaker. He was always representing the Jewish community in front of the Romans at the time. We are talking about the second century. And the Gemara explained why he was considered the person who represented the Jewish community in front of the Romans. Because the Gemara is telling us that there was a very famous debate between the Tanaim about how to view the Romans. The Romans were great builders. They changed the world. And Chachmei Israel were not sure exactly how to deal with this nation that brought buildings and bridges and roads to the world. And the Gemara is telling us the following story. Rabbi Yehuda patach ve'amar kama na'im ma'aseen shel umah zo. How beautiful what they did, the architecture, the everything that they built is magnificent, and they changed the world. Tiknu shvakim, they made markets. Tiknu gsharim, bridges. Tiknu merchatzaot, the bath that you can see until this very day in Rome, that really helped people to enjoy their life. Rabbi Yossi Shatak. Rabbi Yossi, the same Rabbi Yossi who wrote Seder Olam Rabba later, he was quiet. He did not want to response to this. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai from Lag BaOmer, he did not like it at all. And he said, Kol ma shetiknu, lo tiknu ela letzorech atzman. Well, what are you talking about? All these innovations came to serve the Romans themselves. They did not think about like tikun olam, changing the world. Tiknu shvakim, lo shiv bahem zonot. You know why they had markets? Because they wanted to have fun, and they brought prostitutes. And it's well known that indeed it's true. So don't be impressed with the markets and trading. They had a completely different intention. Merchatzaot le'aden b'hem et atzman. They did not think about health and helping the poor people to get a bath. They thought just about their hedonistic needs. Gsharim, you are impressed with their bridges. I'll tell you why they did their bridges. Because when you have a bridge, it's much easier to collect taxes. Halach Yehuda ben Gerim, among them was a person by the name Yehuda ben Gerim, v'siper divrehem v'nishme'u l'malchut. Amru Yehuda she'ila itala. The Romans heard about it and they said, oh, Rabbi Yehuda praised us. we are going to make him the first one. He's going to represent the Jewish community. And indeed, that's why he became Rosh HaMedabrim, the first person to represent the Jewish community. Yossi Sheshatak Yigle Letzipori. Okay, he did not say anything bad, but he did not support Rabbi Yehuda. He's going to be expelled. We are going to send him away from the center to Tzipori. Shimon Shegina, but Shimon who condemned the Romans, he's going to be killed. And from here start the story of Shimon Bar Yochai going to the Galilee in the cave of Pekin. And this is the story, the famous story about Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai and his son Eliezer later. So we are talking about a very difficult time. The Romans are in Israel, and we know, and we read it in the Kinot this morning, Arzea Levanon, the Kinot that is talking about Asara Harugei Malchut, the decree of the Romans not to teach Torah, that was especially, again, the Talmidei Chachamim, the rabbis. By the way, it's interesting to know, I heard that people say, oh, we say Ele Ezkera on Yom Kippur, and we say today Arzea Levanon Adirei HaTorah. We are talking about the Asara Arugei Malchut. I just want you to know that by the Sephardi community, they say Ele Ezkera on Tisha B'Av. So, you know, to say that we don't say... we say Ele Ezkera on Yom Kippur, and therefore this kina on Asara Arugei Malchut iftar Yom Kippur should be humbled. We should know that the Sephardi community is saying Ele Ezkera, that we say on Yom Kippur, they say it on Tisha B'Av. And indeed, the next story about Rabbi Yossi, Pam achat gazra malchut harisha'a gzeira al Israel shekol ha-somech yareg. You have to understand, unlike our time, that rabbis are having a test and they're getting a nice a certificate to be a rabbi. The only way to be a rabbi in the old times was to get a smicha. The rabbi himself gave a smicha. He ordained his students physically to go and teach. And the Romans figured out that if they are going to stop the smicha from one generation to another, Torah is not going to be the center of Am Yisrael. And they were quite right. And therefore, the decree was, Kol ha-somech yareg, kol ha-nismach yareg, the person, the rabbi who will ordain will be killed. Every person who will be ordained will be killed. Ir she-somchin batecharev, the entire city is going to be punished, the collateral punishment. And all the places within the area where the ordination process will take place, they are going to be expelled. This way they hoped that there will be no smicha. And the Gemara is going to tell us later, Ma asa Yehuda ben Bava, one of the people are mentioned in the Asara Arugei Malchut, halach ve'yashav lo ben shnei arim gdolim, he sat between mountains, u'ben shtei ayarot gdolot, because he did not want to be close to one city, because then the Romans might punish the entire city because of him. Uven shnei tchumei shabbat, in an area that really would not belong to any city or any region. Bein Usha leShfaram. Shfaram is not far away from Haifa of today, and Usha is more towards Nazaret, Nazaret Elit. Vesamach sham chamisha skenim elu. And he decided that despite the danger, he is going to ordain five of the students he had. Ve'elu en Rabbi Meir, ve'Rabbi Yehuda, ve'Rabbi Shimon, Bar Yochai, ve'Rabbi Yossi, ben Chalafta, that we are talking about, ve'Rabbi Eliezer ben Shamua. And by this, he saved the ordination process for another five to maybe seven generations. And the story goes on, that the Romans realized what's going on. He told his students, he instructed his students to run away. He was old. He stayed there, and the Gemara ended. Amru lo zazu misham ad shenatzu bo 300 lun biot shel barzel. They punched him. The entire body became like a mesh. Ve'asauhu kichvara. And this is what we say today in the Arzea Levanon, in the Kina on Asara Arugei Malchut. This is a story about Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta was almost killed, but they managed to run away and to actually reestablish Torah for the Tanaim, Yavne, Tzipori, Usha, and so on. You know, very, very interesting. Today, when you drive between Haifa and Migdal HaEmek, there is a tzomet, a junction, that is called Tzomet Tzomech. The name is Tzomet Tzomech, not far away from Shfaram. It's a little bit east of Shfaram. And I never knew why Tzomet Tzomech. Okay, another Tzomet. Normally, there are many, what we call in Israel, Pkakim, Pkakei Tnua. You cannot, like, to go from Haifa to Nazaret or to Migdal HaEmek, especially 3-4 years ago, you always had this Pkak in Tzomet Tzomech. Why Tzomet Tzomech? Because this story. Because this story happened when Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was Somech on these 5 students. So someone in the authority of roads in Israel say this will be a nice idea to commemorate this place and to call it Tzomet Tzomech, which I think if it would happen today, Chas v'Chalila, this story, they would stuck in traffic. They will not be able to run away from the Romans. In their days, apparently, it was not populated. They could run away from the Romans and to save their life, which I think is beautiful. By the way, there is another famous place in Israel, also called after a very famous Talmudic scene. And this is actually closer. I'm sure that everyone here went, especially when you came from Sde Tufa, Lod. If you go to Tel Aviv, you go through Tzomet Mesubin. What is Tzomet Mesubin? It's not far away from Givat Shmuel of today, not far away from Bar Ilan. Tzomet Mesubin, very, very famous. Why Tzomet Mesubin? Because it's not far away from Bnei Brak, and that we call in the and that we say in the Haggadah, מעשה ברבי אליעזר, מעשה ברבי עקיבא ורבי טרפון, שהיו מסובין בבני ברק. So again, someone thought it will be a nice idea to make it צומת מסובים and to remember everyone who passed by. I don't know how many Israelis today know that צומת מסובים is to commemorate this meeting of רבי עקיבא and his friends, and צומת צומח is to remember רבי יהודה בן בבא, but I think it's nice, and you know what? It gives you like a sense of history. Because what the Roman, I don't think that the Roman ever believed that 2,000 years later, Jews are going to drive there and to stuck in traffic jam, because there are so many people walking there and going there. And to me, it's just a beautiful thought that somehow history came back, all the circle, they tried to expel us, they tried to stop Torah, and today, Baruch Hashem, hundreds and thousands of Jews are passing through this area every single day. As I say, this is Seder Olam Rabba, Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta, so let's just summarize what we saw so far. We saw the book of Seder Olam Rabba, not... I don't know any school that teaches it, but it's a Beraita, basically. It's a Mishnaika, it's a Tanaika composition. Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta, and we know something about the time that it happened, the time of Bar Kokhba, a little bit after Bar Kokhba, when time in Israel is very, very tough. Very, very tough. And here, I want to go to the interesting thing. If you're going to ask any historians about the time of the Second Temple, let's say 420 years, you must be kidding. The Second Beit HaMikdash was around 600 years. What are you talking about? To be precise, it's 560-something years. Based on what we know about the Greeks, about the Persians, about Nebuchadnezzar and Babel, we know that after Nebuchadnezzar was defeated by the Persians, Paras ruled the world for 208 years. And we know that Beit HaMikdash was established 70 years or so after the first Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. Let's just go quickly over the Jewish history. First Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. Am Israel is going to exile in Babel. Then a very famous story is happening. What story? In these 70 years? Which one? The story of Purim, Megillat Esther, of course. We are going to discuss this issue in a second, if it really happened then or not. And then Koresh is giving a permission to the Jews in the area to go back to Jerusalem and to establish Beit HaMikdash. Shame on us, only few people went, but they started to build Beit HaMikdash and completed it. A Beit HaMikdash at the time was a very poor structure. We have to know the beautiful pictures, paintings, whatever it is, from Beit HaMikdash is from the time of Herod. Beit HaMikdash until the time of Herod was quite a poor structure. But in any case, the building of Beit HaMikdash was in the beginning of the Persian Empire. Now, the Persian Empire, according to historians, existed for 210 years, 208. They had 10 kings. And this is like agreeable upon everyone. You have to understand, every historian, a serious historian, will tell you the Persian Empire was from the time that they defeated Nebuchadnezzar, and Babel, they were 208 years. Now, you take this, you take the time of Babel, and Persia, the time of the Greeks, and the Romans, you come to something around 600 years. In Jewish history, and it's called the mystery of Jewish history, there is a gap between the Seder Olam Rabbah and the general counting of history of about 168 years, like a black hole in the Jewish history. How it happened, we don't know exactly. Because if you ask, and I'm telling you, until a few years ago, I knew that the second temple was 420 years. And I knew that there are some problems with the Persian time. We don't know exactly what happened in this time. But when you really read history, it's clearly someone went wrong here. Beit HaMikdash was built in the year minus 586 or so, was destroyed. This was the time where the Persian took over Babel. 70 years later, or in between, Beit HaMikdash was established in the year apparently 516. There are minor differences. And then it was destroyed in the year 70. We have here something around closer to 600 years rather than 420. And more than that, if you read the Tanakh itself, it makes more sense to go with a secular cheshbon rather than the cheshbon of Chazal. And the first one to mention it was a person who lived in Italy. His name was Azaria Mina Adumim. His Italian name was Azaria di Rossi. He lived in the 15th century. And he was the first one to cast some doubts about the Cheshbon of Chazal of these 420 years. And you know what? He did not base it on Herodotus or other historians who say that Persia was for 210 years. He based it on psukim in Ezra, in Nehemiah, in Daniel. And he proved quite clearly that Beit HaMikdash, actually the second Beit HaMikdash, existed for something around 600 years. How do you think his book, Meirat Einaim, was accepted in the Jewish community? Three options. One, it was embraced by everyone. Two, some people asked questions, they were not sure. Three, they excommunicated him. Who think A, B, or C? Yeah, of course. He was excommunicated by the Chachamim of Tzfat. Even the Maharal Miprag wrote awful things about the book. Interestingly enough, in Italy itself, where he came and people knew him, they say that only when you are 35 years old, I don't know why they say 35, I don't know what is so magical in this number, only when you are 35 years old, you can read his book, and not before that, and only after you got the permission from your rabbi. This was kind of arrangement. And here came something which is quite incredible and it's important to know. What was the point of the Maharal? Something that goes until this very day. The Maharal said, listen, first of all, and you know, the Maharal was quite open compared to the people in his time. You have to understand it. He said something very important. We make our decisions not about the books. We have Masoret. And this area is going all over the halacha. I'm sure that you heard that in some communities you don't eat until this very day tarnegol hodu, turkey. Why? Because in some communities they never heard about it. And yes, the turkey itself contains all the kashrut signs, but there was no Masoret. So yes, according to the Torah, it's probably off kasher, but we have something that is called Masoret, and if you don't have a Masoret, your rabbi told it to you, and he heard it from his rabbi, you cannot eat these animals. So today, 95% of the people who keep kashrut or even more, they're eating turkey with no problem. But there are some communities that say, well, we don't have Masoret about this chicken, so we don't eat it. The same problem is about the bison, by the way, and some other exotic animals. But this is not the topic of this year. The idea of Masoret. The Maharal said, even if all the psukim in the Tanakh will state clear that Azariah DeRossi is right, he's wrong. Because our Masoret, and our Masoret means what we accepted from the Amoraim, and they accepted from the Tanaim, the Talmud, the Rambam, etc., etc., this is the only thing that we based our Emunah and Halakha on. Everything else, even if you will prove it with Ototu Moftim from the Tanakh itself, worth nothing. Well, as long as the Jewish community live within itself, you can accept this approach. You can accept it. But, you know, when doubts are seeded, sooner or later they are going to flourish. And people started to attend universities. People started to read books. There was a great openness to the world around us, and you know, people started to say, well, we have a problem here. It's quite clear that Beit HaMikdash was not 420 years. It was more than that. What are you doing with this? Indeed, already the student of the Maharal Miprag, Reb David Ganz, already wrote one generation later, and he was fanatic, I can prove it to you from other places. He said, well, there is a problem here. He said, there is a problem here. We have to know it. But when we have to wait the Chazal approach of 420 versus 600 and around 600 years, Well, we have two systems. We are going with Chazal. It's also an approach. My shiur today is not going to solve the problem. I saw the title for my lecture was, is there a way to reconcile the contradiction? The answer is very simple, no. If Beit HaMikdash was 600 years, it was 600 years. If it was 420, it was 420. But the question is, what are we doing as believers when we come to such a serious contradiction between our sources and sources that we have from the world around us? This is a very important question, especially for educators. Everyone who learn or teaching Jewish history will have to face this issue. I'll give you one example, which is very, very important. We don't have time to elaborate over it, but when happens the story of Purim? We just touched it. According to the secular sources, which are apparently right, but don't quote me. According to the secular sources, what happened is the following. The story of Purim is taking place about roughly 40 years after Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim was established. The second temple in Yerushalayim was established. According to Chazal, the establishment of Beit HaMikdash most probably is a result of the story of Purim. Do you get the point here? That's how important it is. Because if you follow the general idea that history is pushed a little bit further, then Ezra, and possibly Mordechai, maybe it's not so clear what happened with Mordechai, they arrived to Jerusalem 4 decades after Beit HaMikdash was already established. So you have to understand the picture here. There was a small group of Jews who fought for physical security, for bread, for education in Jerusalem, and the people in Persia are having fantastic time. They don't care. They needed the Gzeirot of Haman, the Ktav Sitna, in order to push them later to Jerusalem. They would never go to Jerusalem if it was not pushed on them. According to the Cheshbon of Chazal, no, this is not the story. The story is very different. Actually, Ezra, immediately in the 7 year of Atrachashta, he came immediately to Jerusalem. What are you talking about? They were inspired by their friends in Jerusalem, and immediately they made Aliyah. They did not wait like 60 years or 50 years to make Aliyah. And I already saw some idea that this idea that Chachamim changed the history was to cover up this shame. Not to let people understand that at the time where Jews were struggling in Eretz Israel, there were nice Jews behind in Persia having a great life and all the parties of Achashverosh. So even the story of Purim will fall between these two approaches. Did it happen at the time where Bnei Israel already went to Eretz Israel even before, and a major portion of the nice Jewish Persian Jews stayed behind? Or no, on the contrary, they immediately upon their ability to go back to Eretz Israel, they went to Eretz Israel and helped their brothers who just went 6 years before and not 60 years before. It's interesting, and I mentioned it in the first page, Medinat Israel already decided that they take the secular side of the counting of the years and not the Jewish one. Because if you remember, in 1996, there was a major celebration in Israel, 3,000 years to Jerusalem. Anyone attended it, there was concerts and big programs. But you have to understand, it was in 96, it was 3,000 years to Yerushalayim if you follow the secular Cheshbon. If you follow the Cheshbon of Chazal, don't rush. You have another 160-something years to celebrate the real 3,000. So you did not miss anything. You will have the ability, according to Chazal, to celebrate 3,000 years to Yerushalayim in the year 2,180-something, if I'm not mistaken. I saw that even the Dat Mikra, and we had today a fantastic lecture, Rabbi Ari Perel. Yeah, oh, he gave a shiur here. He also made a chart. And yes, according to this chart, with no problem, he stated that Beit HaMikdash stood for 560-something years. Dat Mikra, which is published by Mossad Rav Kook, took completely the secular research as the right one. Rab Breuer, a very important educator who passed away a few years ago, he wrote a beautiful, beautiful article in Shmaatin, which is a publication for teachers, and he said if someone teaches students that the second Beit HaMikdash was standing for 420 years, he's going to destroy his Jewish education. Because sooner or later, he's going to university or he's going to hear from his teacher that it was longer than that based on a very interesting evidence, and he's going to throw away everything. So he said, how am I, as a rabbi, going to explain what happened here? He said, well, you know what? In science, Chazal, we're not experts. Chazal, we're experts in Torah. Clearly, the drashot of Seder Olam Rabba are based on psukim, but does not mean that this is scientifically, historically, exactly the account of time. Chazal had a very different approach. They wanted to show us that Am Yisrael stood the Romans and the Greeks and the Persians, and the issue of the years is not so important. To be honest with you, I have a little problem with it, because we have to know that, for example, the years for Shemitah are based on Seder Olam Rabba. If he was wrong, then we have a problem with the whole system of Shnot Shemitah. This is not the issue right now, but it's not so simple. But I can show you how there is a problem here that you have to face. Rav Schwab, from New York, suggested something very interesting. And he said that Chazal knew that they are wrong. And nevertheless, they confused the Jewish people in purpose. And why is that? We know that over the generation, there was a try to know when Mashiach will come. Wouldn't you like to know if Mashiach will come this year, the next year, 10 years from now? And the Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin bring many Amoraim and Tanaim who try to figure out from all kind of obscured psukim when Mashiach is going to come. In Sefer Daniel, it says about few psukim that clearly, the Malach who told Daniel when eventually the Mashiach will come, or when the redemption is going to come, it's not so clear that it's the same, Mashiach and Geula, instructed Daniel not to tell the people when Mashiach will come, because then, if it's long time from now, they will not do anything. Don't tell them anything. So Rav Schwab suggests that if Chachamim will tell us exactly when everything in the Jewish history happened, people might make all kind of calculations based on the real history. And when they are going to be disappointed, they are going to say, okay, Mashiach will not come, redemption is not going to come, and they will leave everything behind them. This is a very interesting idea of Rav Schwab, who is a Haredi rabbi. And I can tell you that in the second edition of his book, this explanation disappeared. Guess why? Yeah, many people did not like it. This is again like saying that Chachamim indeed gave us the wrong cheshbon. It's in some circles, it's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. So he retract this idea, but since he wrote it in the first book, I just say to you now. I want to say something important about Rabbi Yossi ben Chalavta in this time. And really it based, I just came back from Italy and last week, and I guess like many who are visiting Rome for the first time, especially at the time of Bein HaMeitzarim, it's fascinating. It's just fascinating. It's this culture and what they build and their influence on the world is just something that you have to see in your own eyes. And just one anecdote that happened to me. We took a lady who is a professor in the University of Rome. And she told us about this and about that and their Roman forum and very knowledgeable. And I say to her at the end, I want you to know something. For you, it's history, and it's very interesting history. But you know that next Sunday, thousands of people over the world are not going to eat because this history? She said, what are you talking about? And I told her about Tisha, but she couldn't believe it. She couldn't believe it. Which is, I find it very inspiring that we, for us, it's not history, it's a life. It's a real life, life of Torah. But one of the issues that are very interesting, you know that before Christianity became the religious of Rome, Chachmei Yisrael were in Rome. And we have many stories in the Talmud which are backed up very well by documents from the Romans themselves. There was yearning to spirituality. And the Chachamim who came to Rome converted some of the most influential, especially ladies, in Rome. Any idea why the ladies, not so many consuls or senators? Because what? Because the Brit Milah. This was something that the Romans had difficulty with. They did not want to go through a surgery. But religiously, they were ready to change from their hedonistic life to something more spiritual. And Chachamim came in like other, Petrus and others, and offered it to the Romans. It was not accepted immediately. Obviously, we know that only in the 4th century Christianity became part of the Roman Empire, like the official religion of the Roman Empire. But there was a thirst for spirituality. I strongly believe that Chachamim knew that it's going to be Yahadut or Christianity. These were the options. I don't think that Chachamim wanted to pursue so much the Yahadut. If someone wants to hear and to learn about it, good. By the way, the Emperor Tiberius in the year 19 expelled the Jews of Rome because one wife of one of the consuls, which is second in line to the emperor, converted. And he did not want the Jews of Rome to influence them, and therefore he decreed to expel the Jews from Rome. So I don't think that Chachamim wanted so much to shake the boat, so to speak. However, they already heard about a new Messiah. And one of the big problems, and you can go to Christian sites, I don't recommend it, but you should know that this Nevoah of Daniel, Pasuku is talking about 7 times 70, is falling around the year zero. There is no year zero, but around this time. And the Christian make tzimis from this Pasuk. Like, of course, it's talking about our Messiah, our Messiah, our Messiah. I strongly believe that Rabbi Akiva, who saw the trend, and his student Rabbi Yossi ben Chalavta wanted to dismiss this idea of a Messiah which is not a Messiah. just for a comment. Was a Bar Kokhba an idea just to balance another Messiah or not? I'm not going to talk about this one, but honestly, the more I read into it and dig into it, I start to think that Bar Kokhba, described as Messiah by Rabbi Akiva, came to counterbalance another Messiah and to remove Jews from the idea of Messiah as the Christian understood it. But this is just a comment. I myself did not learn enough to speak about it, but I prepared this shiur, and the more I think about it, there is something in it. And it might be that the idea of Rav Schwab is not so bad. That really, because there was a new competition about who is a Messiah, they obscure the times in a way that you are not going to replace it with their Messiah. It was danger. It was dangerous. But this is too bold, and I don't want to say that I'm sure about it. I just want to make one more comment, which is very interesting, and I invite you to read one of the most fantastic writings over the last 20 years, and this is a doctor by the name Chaim Chafetz, who is a lawyer, but he was completely drawn into this issue of the gap between Chazal and the secular Cheshbon. And he wrote a fantastic, brilliant article in Megadim about 12 years ago. Megadim is a publication of Yeshivat Gush Etzion, with even more important introduction of Rav Meidan, who is a Rosh Yeshiva today in Yeshivat Gush Etzion. Brilliant, deep, profound. And they are going actually to the first road. The road that maybe there was a big mistake in the calculation of the secular historians. Now, we are not talking here about people who are telling you, oh, if Chazal say they are 100% right. No. They don't come with this approach. But with ototum of team, sometimes acrobatics too, they show that there are certain problems with the way we perceive history, the general history today. And it might indeed be that the Persian Empire was shorter than we believe, which will make the time of Beit HaMikdash closer to 420 and not to 560 and more. This, of course, I'm not going to explain in length. This was just like teima. Sometimes you go to, to ice cream. I shouldn't speak about it in Tisha B'Av, and you don't know how is this flavor. They give you like a small spoon just to lick it. That's what I did today. I just wanted to raise some, awareness to this issue. And I hope that you will continue to learn. I will be more than happy to hear someone who will come to me and say, you know what, I was intrigued. I wanted to learn it. Here is what I think about it. Let's hope that next year, Rabbi Kelman, we are going to have these lectures under a completely different title, not under the destruction, but Bezrat Hashem, Binyan Beit HaMikdash.